This is Mike Dilt with the Relax Back UK show on UK Health Radio, your global real feel-good radio station. On the Relax Back UK show, we explore all kinds of health topics, so keep listening and enjoy the ride.
Hi, and thank you for joining me, Mike Dilk, on this week's Relax Back UK show. Now, I've spoken about changes in our transport and commuting habits in the past, but this week I try and look ahead into the future of what might happen in, say, 20 years' time.
We're seeing trials of autonomous buses and autonomous vehicles in different parts of the world. We're even seeing trials of flying taxis in parts of the world.
Futurist Tom Cheesewright gives some ideas on how we might be getting around in 2 decades' time. Then advice for right now on how we can use less energy when driving, whether that be in a new electric car or a traditional diesel or petrol car. And this is from acoustics expert Dr. Duncan Williams.
Using music to help you mediate putting your foot to the floor and burning lots of gas, or in this case, lots of range. You know, electricity still costs money. Gas is not cheap right now, but electricity isn't particularly cheap either.
Then there's also some news on the UK Health Radio Awards. So please stay with me for a great show. Thank you. Okay, voting is now open for the 2022 UK Health Radio Awards. A past guest from the Relax Back UK show and other shows on the station have been put forward. And you can vote by going to the UK Health Radio website, which is ukhealthradio.com. Go to the homepage and right in the middle, there's a button you can click on, the vote button, and that will take you to the voting page. Somewhere near the bottom of this page, you have to scroll through it, you can vote for your favourite presenter. Now, there are over 40 of us now, so plenty to choose from. However, I am a little biased, so please do choose me. Go on, just click that button.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Tom Cheesewright is a futurist, and he's been spending some time thinking about how we might all be getting around means of transport in 20 years' time. But I started off by asking him, what is a futurist anyway?
So I work with organisations around the world, mostly big companies, but also bits of government and charities and others, to try to answer two questions. First of all, what does the future look like, and particularly their future? And second of all, I try to answer the question that inevitably throws up, which is, what on earth do we do about it? So I get involved in answers as well as questions, if you like.
Okay. I've got to say, it sounds like you're a very brave person. Because, you know, my thinking about predictions is it's a very dangerous thing to get into. So is it even possible to predict our future transport habits in 20 years' time?
I think you can definitely predict what. Predicting when is much more challenging. And that's why I like this sort of optimistic vision from Zigo for 2040. Because I think some of these things will come about. Some of these things are already real in some parts of the world. And that's one of the sort of the methodologies of futurism, if you like. You look at where things are already happening on a small scale and see where they might scale up and become mainstream and widespread. So, for example, we're seeing trials of autonomous buses and autonomous autonomous vehicles in different parts of the world. We're even seeing trials of flying taxis in parts of the world, which may become a reality.
Where are we seeing that?
In the Middle East, in China, Canada's looking at trials. They're already building actually ports, so landing spots for these potential future vehicles here in the UK. We've had funding to build one. I think there's one near Coventry, and they're looking at sites around London as well.
Wow. Okay. So I'm going to say, in a previous life, I was a civil engineer. So I have spent some time thinking about these sorts of things. And I've actually done some shows on the future of transport. And I noticed that in the report, there was mention of bike paths. But are those going to be the only things on them? Because, you know, there's all kinds of fantastic, futuristic, electric sort of personal mobility things, you know, electric roller skates, skateboards, knee bots, electric unicycles I've seen even. You know, there's loads of brilliant stuff. Is that all going to be on these bike paths?
So this is why we need to have this conversation now, because I think there are interesting challenges with regards to putting personal electric vehicles on the same paths as bicycles. They can potentially be faster, they can brake harder potentially, they have different sort of steering characteristics. You know, the behaviour of all of these different vehicles is going to be quite varied. And so you've got to say, well, actually, do they work on a bike path? Do they work on the road? Actually, when we're shifting to more autonomous vehicles on the road, that might have better safety characteristics, better behaviours. You know, what is the most appropriate place to put those vehicles? What we can't do is what we've done historically, which is not really think about them at all, not legislate for them, and wait for them to crash over us like a wave or across the bonnet of a taxi, I saw when I was seeing them trialled in Nashville a few years ago.
Well, my thought is that probably putting them on bike tracks, because cyclists might be a little more tolerant than your average taxi driver, I'd suggest.
Well, it depends who's driving the taxi. If it's a machine driving the taxi, they're going to be very tolerant indeed. And that's, you know, again, it's why this conversation is important. It's why it's really interesting that it's an insurance company bringing it up. Because all of this technology is being developed. We get very excited by the prospect of flying cars, drones delivering our pizza, all of these things. But none of it actually happens. None of it comes to fruition unless you've got civil engineers, unless you've got local authorities, unless you've got national government, and unless you've got the sort of financial infrastructure around it, like insurance companies like Zego, to say, yeah, okay, we understand the risks, we've examined this, we're going to put in place the relevant policies and infrastructure to make this stuff possible.
I suppose if you kind of let it just grow and happen without a plan, the result could easily be chaos.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, a conversation is happening now. And I was very pleased by the results of the survey, actually, that Zego commissioned, where you got, you know, 60% of the population came back and said they're excited about this. And over a third are already using some form of electric transport. You know, this is stuff that people are experiencing, starting to get used to and recognising the possible benefits for as well. And if you go and look at the sort of the visuals that they've created around this report, the sort of renderings of, you know, three-dimensional renderings of the possibility of a future high street, you see that actually there's some really attractive possibilities there. We're changing the way we use city centres at the moment. You know, we've got this long trend towards sort of re-urbanisation. We're moving back into city centres. There's an ongoing transformation to be done as we start to move away from fossil fuels and make those centres even more usable.
Let me pick you up, ask you really about what a specific, because in the report it talks about buses being smaller and being able to go lots more places than regular bus routes. And first off, you know, that seems very enticing. But I'm just thinking at some of the places that I've sort of seen around the world where there are lots of small private buses. I'm thinking in Turkey, they have these things called dolmuş, which means to fill up with as much as you possibly can, it appears. So you have lots of little minibuses absolutely crammed with people. And then in the Philippines, you have jeepneys, which is kind of similar. And they always appear in cities that are kind of chaotic and crazy. So I'm wondering, are they chaotic and crazy because of these small private buses? Or do you need the small private buses because of the chaos and the crazy? You know, which comes first, you know?
It's about,
or is that a silly question?
No, it's about recognizing the context in which people travel, and that's changing at the moment. We've seen changes in the patterns, the way people work and live. And it's about building an appropriate public transport system or transport system for the current context. And you know, the sort of the fixed bus route with, you know, loads of commuters trying to get to the mill or to the office or from the suburbs to the city centre isn't necessarily the most appropriate option in a time when people are working different hours, they're working different patterns, they're working from different places, and actually the sort of the shopping behaviours have all shifted as well. We live very different life patterns to what we did when people created sort of the historical transport systems. And so something like an autonomous bus that can respond to demand, that can actually maybe move dynamically. You know, some really interesting work's been done around replanning bus routes based on mobile phone data to understand where people actually want to go to and from. You know, you take that and put it into real time and say, actually, look, we know that at different points in the day, we've got different levels of demand. Maybe even actually you get sort of, you know, collective, you know, groups, if groups can call a bus rather than an individual pod or, you know, one person in a taxi for four, you can actually get an autonomous bus that can move a group of 16, 20 people who all happen to want to go from one spot to another. Say, for example, when the pubs close, you know that a lot of people are going to want to get from the pub to the train station. So why not have some buses do that rather than 93 taxis? You know, all of those things are possible as you start to shift into this sort of next generation of technology.
I do like the sound of a lot of this stuff, I have to say. What about another sort of detail? I'm thinking of details, really. This thing of autonomous single-person cars, I think that's a great idea, because if you look at cars in central London, the bulk of them have one person in, don't they? You know, it's just one person driving a car, taking up all that space. So it seems like a great idea, but will these things be sort of privately owned? Can we get over this wanting, this desire to own our own car, or they'll all be up for hire and sort of whizzing around the streets and we'll just call one up?
I think we're already getting over our desire to own a car. I mean, you know, 91%, I think the latest figure is, of new cars are bought on finance. We don't really own them. We borrow them for a few years and then give them back and get another one. And likewise, actually, the majority of secondhand cars now bought on finance as well. We're basically leasing large parts of our life. And it's become a familiar principle for so much of the things we buy. We lease our media, we lease our phones effectively by paying the mobile phone company a bit over the odds each month for a nicer device. You know, these are very familiar model, and actually even homes, you know, more and more renting, less and less ownership, both for economic and cultural reasons.
But they still feel like ours, don't they? I mean, even if you lease a car, you still, I don't know, put your furry dice up in the window or whatever it might be and put your stamp on it.
But increasingly, you don't necessarily own the bike that you ride through a city centre. You don't necessarily own the scooter that you ride through a city centre. These are becoming very familiar models to people. And you know, when I got my first electric bike, electrically assisted bike, you know, the difference between actually me cycling somewhere and me using that bike in terms of my appearance when I arrived was so enormous, you know, because I wasn't a sweaty mess when I got to the studio or wherever it was, that actually that really appeals. Now, add to that a cabin so that I'm not going to be soaking wet and turning up looking like a drowned rat as well. And, you know, combine that with the challenge we have in terms of our roads, which, as you say, most of the cars have one person in. We don't need more roads. We just need to make more efficient use of the space we've got. And these single person pods, or actually open top, you know, electric vehicles, you know, do make an awful lot of sense.
No, I think they sound fun. What about the actual business of how cities work as far as cargo and sort of stuff is concerned? Because in the report, there was this kind of interesting idea of big flying drones that would deliver, I don't know, everything that an office needs. I was going to say paper, but that might be a bit outmoded now. New computers or seats or whatever. And these things are delivered to the top of a building. And that made me think, because part of my business actually is supplying ergonomic equipment to businesses. And I delivered a load of stuff to the walkie-talkie a while ago. And I went to the basement. It's like going into sort of, you drive your vehicle into a lift and it descends into the basement. And it's like something out of a James Bond movie. But that's kind of how modern deliveries are made. You know, they're into the basement of large buildings. And the top of the building is where, that is the high quality real estate. You know, that's where the boss has his office. And I'm thinking, you know what? The boss isn't going to be very happy with all of a sudden at the top, it's the warehouse, and maybe he's got to have his office in the basement.
Well, if you talk to any large property developer, and I get to do this a lot in my job, they'll tell you that one of the biggest challenges they have at the moment is receiving deliveries. Not deliveries for the businesses in the building, but deliveries for the individuals in the building, shopping off all of the different e-commerce platforms and having stuff delivered while they're at work rather than at home.
And when they should be working, they're busy shopping.
Absolutely. Or, you know, they're just shopping in their lunch hour and they're not at home, so they need things delivered. And you know, no property developer has managed to build a receival room, a storage room big enough to cope with the volume of deliveries yet. Every time they build a bigger one, they find they need even more space. So actually, the ability to deliver these things autonomously in small volumes into the top of the building, particularly if you can get the design of the drone right. And this is a really interesting field of research at the moment. They're looking at how you bring the noise profile of these drones down, because actually the noise is potentially quite intrusive. And there's been some fascinating stuff done on, for example, the edge of the rotor blades. If the rotor blades are all the same shape, then all of the rotors make the noise at the same pitch. So you get a very high volume noise at a really irritating pitch. What they're doing is varying the profile of the rotor blade so that it's spread across more different frequencies. So you get a much lower volume at across a range of frequencies and it's not quite so intrusive. You know, all of this sort of stuff, making the electric motors quieter, increasing the safety, you know, all of that might mean that if you are in that penthouse suite of an office, you know, with the corner overlooking the city, wherever it may be, maybe actually having this flying drone dropping on the top isn't quite so intrusive.
Okay, interesting. And what about the kind of the obvious question, if your staff are having their pizzas delivered for lunch and then the business is having a new computer delivered and all of a sudden there are hundreds, maybe thousands of these drones of all different sizes, some of them with people in, isn't that just going to be like chaotic? There's going to be accidents.
Yeah, there is a huge amount of working out to do around how all this stuff works. And it's why it's so important we start having the conversation now before we start building it. Although I have to say, some of the property owners I've spoken to are already putting in landing pads for these things into their building plans. They're already considering this. But we've got to have people like Zego, an insurer, involved, because there's clearly risks associated. We've got to have people like pedestrians and cyclists and drivers involved about what they want the future to look like. We've got to have local authorities involved. We've got to have the businesses themselves involved. Yeah, I think there are technological solutions to some of this. You know, you can stack the drones as battery power gets denser and the big batteries get lighter. They can just hover for a while until they can drop their thing off. You can have a variety of solutions. One of the things I really liked, and actually the renders that Zego's done of this report, so you can see in three dimensions what a future high street might look like, is actually these sort of rolling delivery banks. You know, sort of the banks you see at petrol stations and stuff, where you can, the lockers where you can drop things off and pick things up. Yeah. Have those turn up as sort of temporary street furniture outside of an office when there's demand. You get a text message to say your parcel's outside, go and pick it up at lunchtime, and then the thing can roll away again so it's not obstructing the pavement or the road. There's some really interesting possibilities where we're not just reliant on one mode of doing things. By the way, you can see all that at zego.com/2040. I'd really encourage you to go and look at these renders you can click through, because there's some great visualizations of what this future high street might look like.
Very interesting. And I do like that idea of the sort of the rolling lockers. Mm. There was a mention of a similar thing of how food might be delivered at lunch like that. And I wasn't so sure about that. I thought, that sounds like curly sandwiches on wheels. But in general, I do love these ideas. But let me ask you this is a serious discussion as well. So it's quite a serious question. If an autonomous bus hits an autonomous single person vehicle, from an insurance point of view, who pays? You know, because I'm in it, it's my car, but I'm not driving it, so it ain't my problem, pal.
Yeah, you know, and I'll leave that sort of conversation to the lawyers and the insurers. But you're right. You know, it's an interesting philosophical question. It's an interesting practical question. And it's an interesting technological question as well, because you've got to have some sort of decision making in there. You know, maybe it's got, you know, a choice between hitting a single person autonomous vehicle and hitting a pedestrian, because someone steps out and it has to swerve. It can't brake in time. You know, all of these things are being fed into sort of collectives of, you know, AI programmers, philosophers, you know, scientists, ethicists. You know, these conversations are going on at the moment, and it's why I'm quite encouraged to see an insurance company recognizing this and going, we love these ideas. It's really exciting. We can clean up our cities, but there's a lot still to be worked out between now and when this technology is both practical, but also we can build the relevant infrastructure, both legal and financial and physical, around it.
So out of all this stuff, which I've got to say, it's fabulously interesting and some of it's very exciting. Which bit do you love the best? Which bit do you want to have fun being involved with in 20 years' time?
Yeah, a bit like you, I'm really enthused by the little electric pods, the personal transport. You know, I love whizzing around on my electric bike. It's my first choice of transport's walking. My second choice of transport, I'm feeling energetic, is my normal bike. Third choice is my electric bike. But the idea that I could rock up in a city and rather than waiting for a cab in the rain, as I've done so many times, that there'd just be this fleet of pods that could pick me up, take me where I'm going. I love that idea, partly because it just feels convenient, but partly because it feels like something out of science fiction. And like most futurists, I'm a bit of a science fiction nerd.
Did you read a lot of science fiction as a kid?
I read a lot of science fiction as an adult.
Oh, do you? All right. But finally, if people are listening to this and thinking, you know what, this sounds utterly bonkers, or it sounds fabulously interesting, but either way, I want to just have a little nose and find out a bit more about that these ideas and potential things for the future. You mentioned a website a bit earlier.
Yeah.
But mention that again. Yeah. Any other sources of information?
Yeah, so check out Zego.com, Zego.com/2040. So, you know, Zego is an insurance company that's actually already involved in things like these electric scooter schemes. So it's already working on this stuff. And go and check out the renders, the visualizations, and the research as well. Some really interesting and very positive stuff about what people think about this, and the level of excitement and optimism people have, much more than the pessimism you might expect. And it's all there at zego.com/2040.
Excellent. All right. Absolutely fascinating. Tom, thank you very much indeed for chatting.
My pleasure, Mike.
The station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Dr. Duncan Williams is a psychoacoustician, and he's been working on our driving habits. We look at the link between acoustics and how we drive. But first of all, I asked him, what is a psychoacoustician?
Doesn't mean that I go around in showers with headphones, but it's to do with my work's really about how humans respond to sound and music. So both psychologically and also physiologically. So what happens in our brains and our bodies when we listen to sound? And of course, music's the most interesting kind of sound that we get when we have to listen to things. So music's a very kind of powerful stimulus to explore.
Well, it definitely changes behaviour. I know it changes my behaviour. But let me just ask you a question, which is kind of a bit off topic, so apologies. But my family, right, has just got a puppy. So we're a few months in. It's all very exciting. And I don't know whether it's our imagination, but sometimes we think the dog is actually listening to and responding to music. So do dogs have rhythm?
Well, I must confess, I'm not hugely well versed on the animal side of things. But I've definitely seen animals respond to music in a kind of similar way to the way that we would. And certainly great apes have music. So chimpanzees enjoy drumming, for example.
Right, okay.
So it's not a huge leap to imagine that your dog is listening in. I think what you could do, not that I'm suggesting you do, or all your listeners do scientific experiments on their pets, but you could...
We'll leave that to our children. We'll do it on our children, though.
Yeah, you could choose some very specific pieces and see whether they respond in the same kind of way. But if you do that, do it at the same sort of time of day. So whether it's before the walk or after the walk or when they've been fed. Because all of those factors play yeah. into how humans respond to music. There's a time and a place to listen to some Motorhead, but it's probably not when you've had a rough day and a long drive home and you've got the bubble bath out and the candles on. That there's probably a different piece of music. Now, that will vary for every person and it might vary for every dog, but the general circumstances will lead to a situation where there's something that's appropriate for you
or for
the listener and something that isn't.
I suppose what I'm going to take away from that some animals, great apes do respond to music, is that actually it's pretty basic and deep rooted. It's going to be sort of deep in our psyche, such that it's very difficult for us to avoid it and turn it off, even if we wanted to.
Yeah, I mean, it's hardwired. So neuroscientists have this idea of there being a lizard part of the brain, a bit of the brain that actually decides whether audio needs to go up to your upper cerebral cortex or whether it needs to just be ignored, because the world is a noisy place and we have to make kind of decisions about whether to listen or not all the time. But it's interesting that across all cultures we have music, and whether the music changes, of course, culturally. Okay. Indian ragas are very different to Western classical music, but they have the same depth and breadth of emotional expression, instrumentation, storytelling, and they are built up over generations and generations and generations. So music is not something that you can ignore. And also, we all like different parts of music. Everybody has a different favourite band or a different favourite genre.
Yeah.
But I've never met anybody yet that will say to me, I just don't get music. I don't listen to any of it.
Okay, interesting. So because we all respond, say if I had a business, say if I had a shop and I wanted people to buy lots of stuff, I might employ you to give me some advice on what music to play.
Yeah, I mean, you've hit the nail on the head. That is actually an industry. People literally do that and are paid to create engaging soundscapes for shopping malls and things.
Right.
The classic example is the elevator music, where people are awkward in a silent space with strangers. So the music takes the edge off. But it can't be something that they know. It can't be something that's too kind of engaging. It just needs to be enough. And there are, techniques that people can use with music that tap in to those kinds of impulses. And shopping is one. But there are, there are nice... the idea of using music to sell things isn't new. But the flip side to that is that there are ways of using music to help people. And so one example would be using music to encourage you to take your walk. Or using music to help you in the gym, do your exercise. The driving example that has come up here is using music to help you mediate putting your foot to the floor and burning lots of gas, or in this case, lots of range. Electricity still costs money. Gas is not cheap right now, but electricity isn't particularly cheap either.
So no, it's important. And I'm surprised it sort of hasn't, as a topic, come up before, because I know if I'm driving and the music changes, my style of driving changes, which will lead to different fuel consumption, but actually also a different style of driving, which isn't necessarily a good thing. You know, so if the music's too loud, you know, I might drive too fast, or if it's a different, you know, tempo or what have you. So presumably this idea has been around for a while, has it, Duncan?
Well, it basically, this study by Kia for their EV6, this is a new electric car, they're interested in it because they put a very fancy hi-fi inside the car. Because it's a quiet car and you've got a fancy hi-fi, you can really hear the difference between something that's very dynamic, so something like some classical music. Whereas if you listen to classical music in your diesel vehicle, it doesn't say there's anything wrong with that, but you might sometimes struggle to hear what's going on. So radio stations that commercially broadcast classical music will heavily compress the music before it reaches the listener. And that actually kind of changes the way the music is. It's almost like being shouted at, which is not what you want when you're listening to something that's trying to use to mediate a strong emotional response. If you're trying to relax yourself, you don't want to be shouted at. And you're exactly right that music could change you from being in one emotional state to another, and that might not be a good thing. So it does depend on you and your choice of music and how you listen to it. There are times, though, when I think the purpose of a car is usually twofold. One is to get you from A to B in the most efficient way possible without any accidents. And the other is sometimes to have fun. If you're up in Glencoe and you've got nice open road and it's a beautiful part of the world, listening to some up-tempo music and driving within the speed limit could be great fun. So there are times when music that would maybe match that emotional state would be really positive. You can kind of try this as an experiment on yourself. If you watch a film,
it might be appropriate in small suburban streets. You
know, absolutely. Yeah. You watch a film with a driving sequence in it, and watch that film on mute. I would say Casino Royale, because it's got this great driving sequence through the Alps with the Aston Martin. But you could also pick The Italian Job, where you've got this sequence.
That's the one that I had in mind. Yeah. As you said that, what you were talking about, I thought, yeah, Italian Job.
And now watch that scene. Well, it's a long old scene in The Italian Job, isn't it? But yeah, watch that half of the film on mute, and it kind of loses its charm a little bit. Yeah, it's not a new idea. It just kind of confirms what we already really knew, which is that music will change the way that you behave. And if you know that and you can hear what's going on, that's a really powerful tool. A tool to use ideally for the better. You know, hopefully no one's going to, sitting at home, is going to think, well, now I'm going to put something on that's really going to make me a bad driver. but driving for fun with the right music is in my view, that's perfectly fine. You know, choose the right music.
All right, so let's move that on. The sort of music you listen to, and even the quality of that music, might change the range you get out of any vehicle. And we're talking electric vehicles here, so possibly an electric vehicles might matter a bit more because there's all this range anxiety that people have.
Yeah, I think it would apply to a petrol or a diesel vehicle just as much, except that, like you say, there's the range anxiety. So if you really want to get the most out of your EV, you could just tell yourself, drive conservatively, drive cautiously, but constantly repeating that over and over isn't really
it's not the most exciting mantra, is it?
And it's
don't
not
get up
very,
in the morning and say drive cautiously.
It's a bit sort of anxiety inducing as well.
It might be.
I think that if you could choose an appropriate soundtrack that you know will work for you, and that gives you a pleasurable driving experience where you can enjoy the music but also get a bit more out of the car.
Yeah,
they've kind of stumbled on a really nice finding there. It's an interesting thing.
All right, so can we put some figures to some of this? You know, so if we're going along, if I'm driving along listening to Motorhead, or I'm listening to something, I wouldn't drive long listening to Motorhead, I don't think, because I'm old and boring. But something that I'm more likely to listen to that's a bit more gentle. What kind of figures, what percentage more mileage am I going to get?
For the exact figures, I'm going to direct you to the Kia website for that. But I can tell you that when people were listening to Beethoven's Symphony No. 9 during this test, they were getting an increase in the range, significant increase in the range. And it's a much more relaxing piece of music.
So what, like 2%, 20%?
You're putting me on the spot, but it's not 2%.
Sorry about that.
So for the exact figures, I'll look them up, but KiaPressOffice.com has that stuff in there. Okay. But it was closer to the sort of 20%-ish mark, as I remember. But, you know, people always say 80-20, and so that's you can tell it's a made-up stat if somebody says 20%, because it's never 20%. Okay, so somebody in my cans has just told me that Beethoven increased the range by 4 times over the pop music examples. So that's a lot of range, 4 times.
The mileage increases by 4 times. That's amazing.
That is something else, isn't it? 4 times more efficient in your range when you're listening, when you're driving.
Yeah. So it's not amount of miles goes up by 4. It's efficiency goes up by 4.
Efficiency.
Whatever that is.
Yeah. So the So if the efficiency goes up by 4 times when you're listening to relaxing music, of course it's not because you're listening to relaxing music, it's because you're driving in a more efficient way. But the influence of the music was there. I mean, that's quite a whopping finding, isn't it? It puts the 20% in the shade all of a sudden. Yeah.
All right. What about if again, because I've said a couple of times I'm old and boring. What about if I'm listening to Radio 4 or a talk radio?
Yeah. I used to work in a music studio before I was an academic, and I could not stand listening to music on the drive home. So I would listen to Radio 4 or talk radio.
Or UK Health Radio, possibly.
Or UK Health Radio, I think.
I think if you listen to UK Health Radio, the efficiency would go through the roof.
Well, there's a study. So we, one of the things about the human voice is it shares all of the properties of music. It's got pitch, it's got timing, it's got timbre. And being able to hear a voice clearly makes a lot of difference. I suspect over lockdown, we've all had video calls where the quality of the audio hasn't quite worked, and it's a very frustrating kind of thing. Good quality audio makes a difference in all human interactions. We're not hugely resilient creatures by default. It's very, very unusual for a human to sort of survive all on their own. And one of the cues about that is we need to be able to talk or communicate. You know, obviously there are people that have their own issues with that, but being able to communicate with other humans ensures our survival. So a good quality sound system when you're listening to UK Health Radio will help you enjoy what you're listening to way more, whether that's in a car or whether that's in your living room or whether it's on a really good DAB outside in the garden on a sunny day. Kind of all is still the same.
Yeah, no, I get it. One thing that I have noticed with electric cars, and this is kind of soundscape in general, actually, is that a number of times I've actually stepped out in front of them, and I'm sure everyone's got an experience of this, because they sound different. So maybe if the driver has got Motorhead blaring and the window down, I'm less likely to step out in front of him. So it might be safer.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? It's one of the things that people often worry about with electric vehicles in general. And you see it with electric scooters nowadays, that the government haven't quite made up their mind about what to do about electric scooters.
I like them. I think they're way ahead, and they're really cool.
I think they're cool too. And it's a question of whether you put a warning sound on them and how you deal with that. Electric cars do still make a noise, because there's the sound of the friction of the wheels on the surface and things. And music would probably, I mean, we've all had this experience, I'm sure, of hearing loud music from a car when you're not inside the car. And sometimes it's problematic and an unwelcome kind of sound, but it goes away pretty quickly. So the Motorhead example would be an interesting one. The reality is that electric vehicles are, they're going to be what the way forward, and how we deal with that worry of not being able to hear the thing will be a challenge that you'll see that come up in legislation very soon.
Yeah.
So, is that
the sort of thing that you might be working on in the future, do you think, Duncan?
Well, in our lab, we last year, we literally spent some time working on an electric scooter warning sound for one of the big electric scooter companies. It's definitely something. You can't have a warning sound that is distressing when you've got lots and lots and lots of them around. You imagine in a city and you've got electric cars or electric scooters and they're all making this alarm sound to alert pedestrians.
Yeah, it'd be horrible.
Yeah, you've got chaos. So it's kind of a challenge. And the government haven't actually made their mind up about electric scooters just yet. They were promising a decision by last month, I think.
Okay, we'll park that one.
Yeah.
We'll revisit that. But for now, if people have been listening to this idea of music or Radio 4 or even UK Health Radio on the sound system, changing the efficiency they get from their driving habits from their car, and think, yeah, this is really interesting. I would like to find out a bit more. You mentioned a website a couple of times. Can you point people to the right place?
Yeah, so the website that I point them to is the Kia Press website, which has got all the tracks and the results and the detail of that stuff. So it's on KiaPressOffice.com, KIAPressOffice.com.
Excellent. All right. Dr. Duncan Williams, thank you very much indeed for chatting. This stuff is really interesting, and I just know it's going to keep on going because it's, you know, these EVs are now part of our lives. So thank you very much indeed.
Thanks very much for your time, Mike. Have a great day.
Thank you very much to my guests on this week's show, and they were futurist Tom Cheesewright and Dr. Duncan Williams, who's a psychoacoustician. And of course, thank you to you for listening.
That was the Relaxed Back UK show with me, Mike Dill. Thank you for listening, and please do join us again next time.